how do you make the most out of your money? How do you save money so that eventually, well, maybe you could actually stop working? Seems out of reach. Well, maybe it's not. Today, we learn more about wealth strategy. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. Today, we are talking about your finances. Yeah, well, okay. I once had this boss. He told me, it's not what you make, it's what you spend. And that has stuck with me forever. And that is something that I think about when I'm about to spend money. I think about, well, if I spend this, I'm not going to have it again. And I've always thought that from, like, I don't know when that was. That was in my early 20s. A great lesson to learn. I just wish I would have learned it maybe a little bit earlier, because I did some spending in my teens. It was probably not so good. But we're here, you know, we're where I am. And the thing is, I feel like my own personal wealth, the money that I have, is comfortable for me. It's fine. I feel good about it. But could it do more? Could what you're doing with your income do more? And is it doing the right things? Today, we are talking about wealth strategy. And we're joined by an author and a wealth strategist. Her name is Vicky Wache. Vicky, for joining me.
Hi, Russ. Nice to join you.
You know, I was stressing about saying your name correctly, so I'm glad that I did okay there.
I know. I suddenly had a, how did he say his last name was? Katanak. Yes, I was just going through my head, like, we're both doing the same things. Can't speak to one another. We're trying to work out how to say our names.
Exactly, right? Well, see, and actually, see, it's a great kind of analogy of, you know, for this whole wealth thing, right? You get something stuck in your head, right? Like, you get something that you want, right? Like the new, whatever, iPhone. And it's like, oh, I want that. And then, you know, you're like, ah, I shouldn't buy it. And then later it comes back and like, oh, I should want. And it's like this thing gets stuck in your head. And then it's like, you don't feel like you can get it out of your head until you actually go out and purchase that, right? Like, I've heard people say that over and over again. And some people, they're like, so I'm just going to go get it. Okay. You don't need the newest iPhone. Like, there's no need for that. It's a want. Let's get into that a little bit and rethinking your personal wealth strategy and rethinking your spending habits and things like that. So how do we go down this path of making our spending a little bit better?
I think your boss was probably the most amazing man for you to ever have met, because someone telling you early on that it's not just what you earn, it's what you spend that matters. Because you could earn millions, but if you spend 2 million, then you still have nothing. Or you could earn 100 and only spend 50, and theoretically you're better off. So it's really understanding, if you like, it always comes back to the maths of money. You know, I don't know about you, but so many people didn't enjoy maths when they were at school. And then that gives them sort of like a skill gap when it comes to thinking about money, because basic money is about addition and subtraction. And what your boss was saying is, understand the subtraction. I'm going to give you a number, and it doesn't really matter what number I give you, because if you take away a number bigger than the number I give you, you've got a problem. And so that's the first lesson, to really just go, all right, I am going to pay attention. And if you can really pay attention, start writing it down. The best thing your listeners could do is to write down their income and expenditure. And the reason for that is that starts to make the conscious, or the spending conscious. And once you make your spending conscious, you've cracked it.
Yeah. You know, I remember doing that for my business. I ran a business for 13 years. And I remember having to go through and enter in each receipt and go through. It was so much work, because I had this, like, really bad system at first. And I got a better system as, you know, this was like right when I first started doing my business, where actually writing it down made me not want to spend, because I knew I was going to have to go and write it down and look at it later and see, like, oh man, I spent a lot on whatever coffee or whatever it is that I'm spending money on. And it's interesting, though, to do that. Now, we do that now, where everything goes into a spreadsheet so that you can kind of see, like, what you are spending and where. It's the where. Like, does that where align with your principles, your goals, and where you want to be, right? Because we can't give somebody a magic recipe of where and how to spend their money, right?
No. It's a totally independent choice, and it's based on your values. You really are, Russ, very enlightened compared with a lot of the people I speak to. And I speak to people from all walks of life, from people who are maybe single moms, not earning money right the way up to people running, you know, million-pound turnover businesses. And very few people write down. I do the same as you. I mean, if you could see us on video, I've got a little pile of receipts here that when I finish with you, these are the latest pile of receipts from at the weekend. And I've got my spreadsheet open, ready to enter them in. And it's that, it's so many things. It's that consciousness that comes with the physical act of having to enter the number, but it's also the analysis that you can do, as you say. So what exactly are we spending our money on? So there's going to be food. Let's put it this way around. There's going to be some cause that no matter what you do, you have to pay for them. So you've got to pay for the roof over your head, and you've got to pay for whatever your utilities are, and you've got to pay for whatever your taxes are. So no matter what you do, whether you get out of bed, whether you eat, you don't eat, have coffee or whatever, you have to pay for those. And then, let's be honest, we want to stay alive, so we're going to put food in there as an essential. So those essentials go into your spreadsheet and you have to spend on them. But my spreadsheet, and I share it with my clients, and I'll happily share it with your listeners if they want, they can just change it so that it makes dollars instead of pounds, is I split it into core costs and luxuries. And this is very much the same. You mentioned about having a business. If any of your listeners are running businesses, then they're doing exactly the same thing. What are the core costs of running a business? What prices or what payments do I have to make, whether I make a sale or not? And then there's another batch, which is about the costs that are incurred with actually making a sale. So if you knit jumpers, then you still have to employ the staff, you still have to pay your taxes, your insurance, the rent on your premises, but you only buy the wool every time you make a jumper. So that's sort of the parallel there. It's not complicated. It's a simple thing to do. And frankly, it can save your life. It can save your marriage. It can save your sanity. It can make your life stress-free. But more importantly, it can give you back the power to create the life that you want to live.
Mm-hmm. There's so many things that are on auto pay these days, right? Your Netflix or, you know, whatever Hulu things that you're paying for on a monthly basis. Those things really add up and they're on auto pay. Is that done just so that you kind of ignore it and just let it happen?
I think it depends on what the thing is. So if it's a utility bill, then it's quite nice to spread the cost and, you know, you'll spend more on electricity now and you'll spend less on electricity in the summer. So, you know, your prices can go up and down. But I think, as you say, it's the things that are non-essentials. Now, I've got Netflix. I have Netflix. I love Netflix, but that falls in the luxuries for me. So if anything happened, and for example, you think back to when the pandemic and a lot of businesses closed and you've got to tighten your belt, what are the things that you can't live without? And no, I'm sorry, Netflix is not one of those things. What you can't live without is a roof over your head, some form of heating or lighting, although you could reduce that, or food in your stomach or food in your children's stomach. You know, so there are things that are truly essential and things that aren't. I think where that analogy that you had with the chips and the casino comes in is the credit card. The credit card is so far removed from real money. And look what Amazon does. Amazon goes and other online retailers, but Amazon does the same thing. So you can shop to your heart's content. If you've got a mobile phone, you're doing it off your phone on an app or you're clicking on links and you've got your credit card already put into your Amazon account. And so they've even given you the option. You don't even have to put it in a basket where you then go, oh, look, I've got 10 things in my basket and my basket's going to cost me £100. They go, buy it now. And that buy it now moment, bam, you've spent it. That's it.
Yeah.
And it's this.
It's like playing a game on your phone.
Totally. But it's a costly game, because what you have to remember is that every pound, dollar, yen, or rupee, or anything that you have is a result of you giving your time over to whether it's your business or your employer. And that is time that you're not spending with your family, carrying out things that give you joy. Like you mentioned, your wife is an artist, and I was speaking to someone before who's a musician, or maybe with your children or your grandchildren or relatives or friends, or going for a run or anything. When you go to work, you are there for a specific reason. And yes, you might love your business. I love my business. But still, when I'm here in the office working, I'm not with my other half. And I think given the choice, as much as I love my job, if I had to choose and only do one thing, work for the rest of my life or be with a partner for the rest of my life, I would be with my partner for the rest of the life. Therefore, every day that I'm working, I'm choosing not to be with him. Right. So there has to be a purpose for this. There has to be a joy for this. And for a lot of people, the sole purpose of going to work is to make money. And then if what you're not doing is taking care of that money, and you're, and I'm going to use the term wasting, it sounds a bit judgmental, but just go with it for a minute. If you're then wasting that money on unconscious consumerism, how's that for a mouthful? That you're going with unconscious consumerism and you're just wasting the money, you're forcing yourself to go to work for longer, longer hours, more days, more years, whatever.
So that is something that I have recently started. In November, I started actually tracking my work hours. So I know exactly how much I make per hour, and I know how many hours I'm going to work per week. And the nice thing about that is I know also that if I spend less, I can do less. I can work less, you know, and then, you know, like the podcasting thing, you know, it's not going to make me a millionaire, but you know, there's sponsor money coming in, things like that. It's cool. But that too is this huge time suck, right? And that is my side gig, and it's taking up a ton of time, and I love doing it. But at a certain point, you know, there's, I guess, diminishing returns of like, okay, well, I love it a lot, but I'm not making enough money. So should I keep doing it? How do you make decisions like that when you're thinking about wealth? Like how long should I keep doing this if it's not making that money that I want to make?
I'm going to answer that question, but what I just want to come back to is what you described as a wealthy life. When you record what you spend and you understand the flow of your money within your house, and you know how much you need to pay your bills, and you know how much you earn an hour, you can work out how many hours you need to work to pay your core costs, which I consider to be enough. You've got enough money to cover your basic expenses, or more than enough, which covers your basic expenses and then your fun money on the side. That to me is the epitome of a wealthy life. And you've just said that exactly the words that would describe my life. I know how many hours I have to work. I know how much I need to earn either a day or a week or a month. And I know how much I need to have as how many months worth of money I've got sitting in the bank. And then I can choose when I want to work. And when the weather's been nice, obviously we're in the middle of one of your hurricanes coming over here. Thank you very much.
And then, we like to share.
Oh, I know. But we're in that season where we're just getting battered and the nights are gray and everything like that. But when the weather's nice, I look at my diary a week or so ahead because we get 10-day weather forecasts. And it says to me, right, next Tuesday, Wednesday, the weather's going to be nice. And I go, right, guess what? I'm going out. And I'll make sure that there's nothing in my diary because I can choose to do that because I'm on top of my maths. And that, to me, is the ultimate of freedom. If we now go back to your question of, okay, so I'm doing something I quite enjoy. I'm running a podcast, but it does take a lot of time. I get a bit of sponsor money in. But, you know, is the payoff really there? It's not an income generating business. And unless you're actually doing something you really have a burning passion for, it's sort of falling in that wasteland. It's neither income generating or 100% passion led. I mean, you can enjoy it, but it's not, you're not driven to do it. Then one of the ways that you can look at it is, how can you do exactly the same equation? What are the costs involved in running the podcast? So what if you got someone in to handle your social media? How many hours would you need them a month? And what would they need to do? And how many hours, what would they charge an hour? And therefore, how much would they cost? And could you get someone in to produce the podcast for you instead of doing it yourself. Now, there's going to be a whole control issues there because you and I spoke right. about how you might how you might like to chop things up, but you could give that as a set mm-hmm. of instructions.
Right.
And then what if you used the sponsor money to pay for the staff, and then all you do is rock up, a bit like I have today. All I'm doing is rocking up, having a conversation with you, and then I'm heading home, whereas you've rocked up, but actually in advance from that, you've had to plan who you're speaking to, then we're going to have the conversation, and then you've got to do all the editing, and then you've got to do all the marketing. Well, you could mm-hmm. rock up, do this like I'm doing, and then just hand it over to somebody else, but get the sponsors to pay
for me. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And, you know, so that what you're describing and the reason why one of the reasons why I bring this up is because my business that I had for 13 years started as this little side project that I enjoyed. Right. I had an entertainment company for 13 years. My first couple of gigs were just DJing at a bowling alley. Right. Making, I don't know, probably enough to play to pay for the, you know, the movie that weekend or whatever. So I wasn't making a whole lot. I was enjoying it. I was having fun. It was a social thing for me as well as a somewhat of a money-making thing. And eventually that turned into a business, right? And I loved it. And I, like I said, I did it for 13 years. It grew to be where I had 500 or 600 events a year. I had these kind of big contracts with big tech companies to do all of their events. All of these things were going, you know, fantastic. But like, I kind of had to sit through a lot before I got to that. There were years of like, oh man, should I be doing this? Like at what point when you're doing these kind of passion projects or something that sort of falls, is this a necessity? Is this, is this something that I should be doing? Like at what point do you just say, okay, this is just going to be a passion project. I'm going to give up on the potential for making money for this and I'm just going to enjoy it and have fun. Is bringing money into it like messing that up, you think?
No, because we work in a society that's driven by money anyway. So we don't have any choice but to bring money into it. So if you come back to a completely blank sheet of paper again, so you've got a completely blank sheet of paper and you start off with, what do I want my life to be like? How do I want to spend my time? And in one of my books, The Wealthy Retirement Plan, I talk about the four M's. It's interesting because at school, we're taught to go to school, get good qualifications, go to college, go to university, get good qualifications, then get a job. But actually what you've accumulated along the way, very sneaky again, is a pile of debt that you then have to work to pay off. What if school right. said to you, I tell you what, Russ, what really interests you? What are you passionate about? What are you interested in? How would you like to spend your time? Now, Russ, you're a grown-up. You're going to have to spend some of your time generating money. Now, that could be as an employee, it could be as a business owner, or it could be because you've got some money already and you're going to manage your investments. But you're still going to have a little bit of, let's call it work time, means. This is how you're generating your means. But you might also have a mission that you're on. You might also want to spend time creating memories, which is often up and down the generation. It might be where your holidays sit. It could be, you know, music gigs that you go to. And then there's multi-generational. So there's all of these four M's, means, memories, multi-generational, and your mission. And if you then sat down and thought about your life and go, right, well, at the moment, I'm only in my early 30s, so I'm quite prepared to put a bit more of my time into work because I know that I'm going to want a family soon. So I'm going to stack up some income so that I could actually take some time off when my family comes and focus on the memories. Or you might be through the other side and you might have had your kids. And so now you're saying, well, now I want to focus on memories and multi-generational stuff or memories and my mission or whatever combination. There's no judgment here at all. It then becomes a maths problem of, this is how you want to live your life. This is what it's going to cost to live your life that way. So you've got your basic overheads, your rent or your mortgage. You've got your utility bills and taxes, and you've got to have some amount of money for a food budget. And then you're going to have, because of how you've chosen to allocate your time, certain costs, cost of sale or cost of fun. How much mm-hmm. is it going to cost to enjoy time doing your mission thing? Or how much is goodness me, multi-generational with grandchildren. I know I look too young, and your listeners aren't going to be able to see, but do agree with me, please, Ross. I look far too young.
I totally.
Thank you. Look far too young to have two. They are very young grandchildren, but boy, they're expensive, you know? So when you get to that stage, you need to allocate a lot of money towards them. So you can allocate your money then according to how you want to spend your time. And then what you do is you backfill and you go, okay, so it's going to cost me, I don't know, $2,000. I'll do it in dollars for you. $2,000 or £2,000 to live the life that I want to earn. And that's going to take me, say, I'm going to say 5 days a week, right? So 3 days during the week, and I want to use the weekends for this stuff. So I've got 5 days, which only leaves me 2 days in which I've got to earn $2,000 a month, which is 500 a week, which is 250 a day. What can I do to earn $250 a day? Well, that's fine. So if you know that you make $250 a podcast, great. Record one podcast a day, get your $250. And obviously, I'm not allowing for the cost of doing the podcast or whatever. Expenses, you know, right, so you've got expenses and you've got to multiply it up and all of that sort of stuff. But just to keep the number simple, if you need $2,000 a month, that's $500 a week, that's $250 a day if you've only got 2 days left. And if, for example, I don't know, a massage, you charge $100 a massage, you do roughly 3 massages a day. Great, you've made even more than your budget. You've made $300 a day and you do that for 2 days. And obviously you've got to get your customers in and everything else. But great, now you can have the next 5 days off. You've made the money that you need. You have enough. You mentioned that you're happy with the amount of money you've got. I'm happy with the amount of money I've got. But I bet if we compared scores, our numbers would be completely different. But if we then zoomed out from just seeing ourselves here with our microphones, our houses would be different. Our cars would be different, whether we've got children or pets or when we had a holiday and where that holiday was and what sort of food we like to eat. Is it organic or is it heavily meaty or whatever? You know, we are all individuals. And that's why I said there's no judgment, but there is a maths equation that is the same equation for everybody. How do you want to spend your time? How much is that going to cost in terms of money? And how much time do you want to put towards it? And then what's left? That's the amount of time in which you've got to earn the amount of money you need to live the life you want. Ta-da!
Right. I love turning stuff into math problems, by the way. That's always fun for me. Like, I just think it's a great way to look at things, right? I do that at my day job. Like, I'm turning math into decisions for marketing or various things. What I was thinking as you were saying that is going through the different time spans, right? Like, so in your 30s, you're probably going to want to spend more money on fun.
Yeah.
You know, then, and that fun will be look different than your 40s fun. And there's, as you go, you're going through these changes. Do you suggest, and I don't know how often you look at this, is this a decade? Is this a year? Like, at what point do you kind of look at those numbers and refocus or change those numbers? And then how far should you plan out on those numbers?
So that's almost quite a lengthy conversation because it all depends on where we start. But generally speaking, if we start with a spreadsheet where you're going to manage your income and your expenses, which is basic housekeeping, then much like you do in a business, if you enter what you spend on a daily basis, so you've gone out today and you spent money, then when you come back to your desk tomorrow morning, make the first thing you do, just come in 5 minutes earlier, fill out your spreadsheet, job done, right? So it's not becoming a labor. But then quarterly, I bet people don't do this, sit down with your entire family and go, look, I'm just looking at how we've been spending, you know, really what we've got for a whole year, because we know our whole year, and I'll just make the numbers nice, 12,000 for the whole year, which is roughly 1,000 a month. We're currently on target. We've only spent 2,500 in the first quarter, which is great news, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to whack that extra 500 that we haven't spent into a savings account, just, you know, either for emergencies or some fun at the other end of the year. Everybody happy? Yes. Everybody know we're on schedule. What if we could save another 500 in the next quarter? We'd have an extra 1,000. And then instead of only going on a week, 1 week holiday, we could have a 2 week holiday. Should we work towards that? No, I don't want to. I still want to spend and it's my birthday. So you make those decisions
right
in that period. Now, if you're talking about, and you mentioned decades, I don't think we can be so linear as that, because we don't all get married at, you know, 24, have finished all our children at 32, have a midlife crisis at 40. It's different birth years for everybody. And I think what's more helpful is when you know something's coming up. So you've met this person, and maybe you have or haven't told them, but you're thinking that this is the potential for something serious. You might want to have a little rethink about what that might mean to your life now. And do you and this new person in your new relationship want to put in a year or so of carrying on the fun? But then you think, well, what I'm also going to do is have a conversation with them that says, should we have some fun for the first couple of years? And then not that we're not going to have fun after that, but should we then look at how we spend our money so that we could maybe put in 2 years of saving, so hard saving for the kids to have children, so that one of us can be off work with them and not have to worry about money. Right. That doesn't mean to say that someone has to stay home with them, but you now have the money to make a choice rather than not having the money and having no choice. And then you can work your way through again. How do we want to educate our children? Are they going to go to regular school? Are they going to go to private school? Are they going to be homeschooled? What implication does that have? How many children are we going to have? Could we make sure that we have all the same sex so that we could pass the clothes down? You know, what are you planning as you're going to go out? Are we going to allow them horses? Horses are expensive. What are we going to allow our children to do?
Right.
All of this stuff that kids do now, and are we going to end up having to have two cars because we're going to spend all weekend chauffeuring these kids around to all their activities? So you can plan all of that. And that's part of, isn't that part of the joy of thinking how you want to live your life? You know, are you always going to just factor in that you're going to have a date night? And is your date night going to be once a week or once a month when the kids come? Well, plan it. Because if you plan it, the chances of you being able to have it are a lot higher than if you don't. And your strict question came, how often should you review this? Well, why not review it every year? You're going to review your finances on a quarterly basis. At the end of four quarters, when you've done a whole year of it, go, wow, we did well this year. We spent 23 out of 24, or we didn't do too bad. We spent 25, we planned for 24, or crikey, we spent 35 and we thought we were going to spend 24. What happened? Can we go back and have a look? Because actually, with the money we've got and the plans we've got, we can't have the plans that we want if we continue to spend in this way. So you're just making informed choices, and that leads to conscious spending, and it stems from understanding that there is no difference between money and maths. It's the same thing. Maths is the thing that you were taught at school where you were judged. Money is the thing that society will judge you by, and actually you don't really care. But school, it mattered because you got grades, and now you need to put the two things together and make them work for you. You and I are weirdos, if you don't mind me calling you that, by liking maths, by liking a spreadsheet.
Right.
You know, I can imagine that you've got some listeners that are going to be squirming at this. And I just want to plead with you, don't let what someone said to you at school or an imagined fear of a spreadsheet stop you from doing this. If you don't like a spreadsheet, do it on pieces of paper. This is fundamental to your sanity, your future stress lives, stress levels, the quality of your life. Everything hangs on your ability to control money and not allow the marketeers to control you, your money, your time, your life, your lifestyle, because they want to make money out of you.
Right, right. A marketer by day, by the way. Sorry.
I know, don't. But you see, I'm a business owner too, and I want you to buy my stuff.
Yeah, totally.
We are all consumers of stuff because we don't live on little plots of land that we're self-sufficient on. We're not growing the corn that makes our clothes or cotton that makes our clothes and corn that feeds our bellies. The world's not like that anymore for us.
Right.
So buying and the circulation of money is part of the system. What you don't have to do is buy stuff you don't need and pay interest on it that you didn't need to pay because you didn't need to buy it in the first place. And what you've now done is worked all of this amount of time and not been with your family who miss you, who are stressed, your relationships stressed, and then you're buying rubbish that you don't need, and maybe gifts for the kids and stuff for the partner just to make them happy, but actually really all they want is to see you, getting further into debt, incurring more interest and more stress to the point where it all goes pop. That's the line you don't have to go. I said right at the beginning, there's no judgment. Do what you like, but do it consciously.
Right.
You know, I have a bad shoe habit. I know I have a bad shoe habit. No, that's not bad shoes. That's lovely shoes. But it's a bad habit because I don't know about you, what you've got on your feet. Wearing shoes, I don't think I've worn proper shoes in over 2 years. When I'm in the house, I'm in barefoot or slippers. And when I go out, we're mostly going for a walk. And so we're wearing trainers. And yet I still, in January, bought 2 brand new pairs of shoes to go in the cupboard with a couple of pairs of shoes that are brand new and still in the box because they were just too pretty not to buy. But I know I have that as a bad habit, right? I know that. And I can live with that. It's different if I'm buying stuff all the time to make me happy, which isn't really making me happy because the process of buying it is incurring debt, which is incurring interest, which is incurring stress, which is causing a row in the family. And actually the thing that I thought I wanted has just made me more miserable. That's not a good path.
Right.
That's the difference.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I don't think that we should be looking at things to try to make us happy. We should figure out the source of why we need that happiness, right? Like, what is going wrong and how do I fix that instead of just, you know, going back to the iPhone, like buying the new iPhone.
Russ,
it sounds like I don't have Apple stock. I do have Apple stock and please do buy iPhones because that helps.
But Russ, you're the marketeer making everybody buy the stuff. You see, it's the marketeers that make us think that the new iPhone, and yes, I've got an iPhone and, you know, we do need to buy things. And by buying things, we're keeping people in employment and everything else. Mm-hmm. But as you say, the iPhone isn't going to make you happy. If there's a level of unhappiness, you've got to dig into that first. But the marketeers are giving us all the other measurement, the other message. You're only going to be happy if you have this pair of shoes, this dress, this coat, this beard trimmer, that T-shirt, you know, this sofa, that telly, whatever it is. The message that we're being pounded with is these things are going to make you happy. And you or I are both of the opinion that it's not the things that make you happy. But that's because you and I, as I said before, are slightly up the weirdo end in that we love math. We love the spreadsheet. We understand the role that money plays in our lives. And that makes us unusual. And all I'm pleading with is for people to make their spending more conscious, because then they can see through this veil of mysticism. Buy things, yes, but buy things knowing why you're buying it. And if you like, the consequence of transferring your hard-earned money to someone else, because once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah. And I think the calculation there that you said earlier is time, right? Mm-hmm. Time to money to that item, right? When you think about it that way, it does change the way that you're looking at these things, right? Like if I look at something and I say, oh, well, that's going to cost me 2 hours of my life. Now I could either work for 2 more hours or I could not have this. Do I really want to work for 2 more hours? Maybe not, depending on the item, right?
Absolutely.
And I think making those kind of calls is good. And also when you're doing that annual kind of clean out of receipts and like looking at the spreadsheet and whatnot, do the clean out of the garage as well, or do the clean out of the storage, the closet, the items that you just had to have that are sitting in there that now you're going to go donate or trash. Like that's another way to think about your personal wealth, because when you see how much you're getting rid of, it's like, well, I just had to have this and now it's going away. Like, that's always a great way to look at it too. I sort of like to be like somewhat of a minimalist if possible.
No, I agree with you. And I would have said, well, until we moved into this house, as I said, we moved here just at the end of 2019. I would have said to you that I was not so much a minimalist, but that I wasn't materialistic, that I'm more interested in memories than I am interested in stuff. And yet we managed 2 giant lorries full of stuff. And I was embarrassed. embarrassed by how much stuff we moved from one house to another. And we'd cleared out. So not only did we bring two big lorries full of stuff, we had a container full of stuff that we'd already packed up that we knew that we didn't need now. And we still got a house full. And now we're doing building work. So we've had to clear out the garage, and we've got another sort of container load at the other end of the garden. And there's still the first container load that we haven't been to. And that's how we have companies. I don't know what yours are called, but like Big Yellow Storage or the Big Box Company or whatever.
Right.
You know, big storage. How we reached this place in society where we've actually got a successful series of businesses whose sole purpose is to build a building full of small cubes or large cubes with doors on, where you can hire that space in order to put the stuff that you've bought that you can't fit in your own life, in your own house, but you're not prepared to sell, and you stick it in that box and you lock the door and then you just go and buy more stuff.
Right.
That's the craziness of it, yeah?
It is pretty crazy.
And you are paying money that costs you time in order to buy stuff that you don't really need or want anymore, but you don't get rid of or pass on for whatever reason. You know, so then there's more money gone into it. Now you're spending more money to store the stuff that you spent money on that you don't really want anymore, and then you're still going to go and buy something else again tomorrow. You know, if you try to explain that,
it is crazy when you think of it that way, right?
Totally, totally crazy. But that's the point. See through the marketing, make informed decisions, recognize that we live in a society where, you know, money does need to move around. We do need to earn money. We do need to pay for things. And that's all perfectly fine. And there's no judgment here, but just look at it. And if you're not happy, maybe one of the reasons you're not happy is that you're spending more of your money on stuff that you don't need and not spending more of your time with people that would make you happy or that you would make happy by being with them.
Right, right. Because time is that, you're not going to get more of that. So that the resource that we need to protect.
Yeah.
All right, Vicky. So this has been a fantastic conversation. I thank you so much for joining me. And if people wanted to learn more, you've got some fantastic books that they should probably check out. Can you tell us a little about those books?
Yeah. Having just said about Amazon, obviously, and being conscious of what you're spending.
And the marketing thing. I mean, come on.
Absolutely.
What this is doing is it's taking these out of your house and helping you to pay less storage. So this it's all a win.
Yeah, but still do this consciously. So yes, I've written 5 books. 4 of them are easily online. Some of them are about property investing, which is something I do. But one of the books that you might really be interested in is called The Wealthy Retirement Plan, A Revolutionary Guide to Living the Rest of Your Life in Style. If you can spell my name, which is Vicky, V-I-C-K-I, and Wooshe, W-U-S-C-H-E, you can find me on Amazon. You can put those two together and add .com, and you can find my website. And then if you go to vickywooshe.com/resources, you'll be able to find the spreadsheet that I've been speaking about that I use. It's called the Wealth Tracker. You'll be able to see the books, and there's plenty of manuals in there that can help you really sort of understand your goals, your values, what's important to you, and plenty of resources there that will help you out that won't cost you anything.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. You turned it around there. I
did. Yeah.
We made it free.
Yeah,
That's good.
We did.
Also, subscribing to this podcast is free. I'm just saying for those listening. Vicky, thank you so much for having this conversation with me and helping us learn more about wealth strategies.
Thanks very much for inviting me, Russ. It's a rare man or a rare person that loves a spreadsheet as much as clearly you do.
Well, it's nice to share that love with you. Hey, another thing that Vicky and I both love is podcasting. Yeah, since we did the interview and this airing, well, Vicky's actually started her own podcast as well. It is called A Wealthy Life. It is available wherever you get your podcasts. There's a link to it in this podcast's description, also a link to her listener fan club and her website. Hey, thank you for listening, subscribing, and reviewing That's very important. Learning more, we encourage you and thank you for rating the podcast and sharing it with your friends. As with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice, and we encourage you to consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. On the next Learning More, we're going to continue this talk about money. We're actually talking money with the CFO of the Comedy Store in LA. And yes, we do have plenty of laughs as well. That is coming up on the next episode of Learning More. Thank you again for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.